Welcome, everybody, to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Jeff Erickson here with Fred Zinke. Fred, as always, is my trade partner. My co-host here, a podcast partner, but he's also a trade partner this week. Fred, let's launch right into it. You and I made a trade in mixed labor.
For sure. And I think our trade in mixed labor is a great example of how trades don't always have to be a long, drawn out, exhausting, contentious process.
That's right. That's right. I shot you a DM on Sunday night saying, hey, I've got three closers. You have one save. Seems like we're a match. I could go a couple different routes. I'm using Eric Gonzalez as a corner infielder right now. Now I could have waited. Had I known that I was going to get Christian Walker back, maybe I wouldn't have had as much of a need for that. But I also had like Jed Lowry at my UT. I had room for a hitting improvement or starting pitcher improvement. And I had three solid closers, too, which is hard to find right now. Kenley Jansen, Emmanuel Clase, and Ian Kennedy. All three of them I feel pretty good about right now. And it was nice just to have that as something to trade from. I was already in first place in saves.
Yeah, and I was in last and kind of deciding whether I was going to punt saves or not. And I have Joey Votto on my bench, and I couldn't get him in, even in a 15-team league. It's just the way it works. Like, I've had a ton of injuries on that team, but none of them have been the players that Joey Votto could replace. So Freddie Freeman at first, Eric Hosmer at corner, Franmil Reyes at utility. So, I mean, I know the odds are now that one of those three will get hurt this week, but so far I had a bunch of middle infielders, outfielders get injured, but not any of those first baseman utility guys. So, this was one where I just decided like, I wasn't going to try to fish for like this buy it low, like deal or anything. I was like, this is simple. I have Joey Votto. He's hitting pretty well to start the season. The Reds are hitting great. You're a Reds fan. Let's get Joey Votto over to you. And I figured Ian Kennedy would be your least valued of your three closers. So I was like, I didn't even go fishing for one of the other two. I was like, whatever, I'll take Ian Kennedy. And he's pitching well, as you said. It's still Ian Kennedy, but he's pitching well. So we'll just hope for the best.
Yeah, that's right. And the same thing, like I tweeted out right after, like, hey, Fred and I made this trade. We made it like I DM'd you like midnight, Sunday night, Monday morning. You followed up like, done. You proposed what I was going to propose to you. That's funny. Like, oh, yeah, well, that I guess we're thinking along the same line. It's nice when you don't have to just like, oh, you're way off on your valuation. But, that was great. And so, got it done before the game started. Steve Gardner approved it right away because he's a very good commissioner and a nice human being too. So we like Steve, but off we go. And it's your classic win-win. We hope. I mean, I hope Kennedy's great still. He has been amazing though so far. 16-0 K to walk, velocity is up, swing strike rate's over 17%. And the best thing I thought that when I tweeted out our trade, we got reactions on both sides saying, oh, yeah, Kennedy's going to get traded. Fred's going to regret that. Oh, Votto's replacement level corner. You're going to regret that. I guess that means we got it right.
I think so. I thought about, because you were looking for a starting pitcher too. So I thought about asking for one of your other closers, probably Class A, and then throwing in like a pitcher. And I was like, okay, I have like the high end guys who you can't throw in like Brandon Woodruff and Zach Gallen and things like that. But then I have like the Alex Cobbs and Dane Dunnings and Josh Fleming, who we both are kind of interested in, guys like that. And then I was like, you know what? It's going to take too long. It's Monday. We got games today. I'll just make it a one for one. And, and now what I would often do, I often do some of these like side podcasts where we talk about trading, is if I had a little more time, I probably would have given you like two offers, like the one for one, or would you like Votto and one of these like four starting pitchers and you give me Class A instead. But in the end, I was like, let's just do the one for one. I do think there's a decent chance Kennedy gets traded at the deadline and ends up working set up on another team. It just makes a lot of sense. But you never know. Maybe he won't. Maybe they'll keep him. And in all honesty, with where I'm at in saves, I have a feeling I might be running into the Rockies closer on my roster soon, although I've been kind of fishing for saves and I haven't found any so far. But my gut says that Daniel Bard's had his last save chance for a while, and I grabbed Michael Givens on Sunday night so for a dollar. So if I get lucky, I can get Kennedy and Givens maybe for – we'll see how long Givens lasts if he gets a chance. But if I can get Kennedy for close to 3 months, good enough.
Yeah, and that it's kind of like the Shane Green on Detroit. You know, he got 25, 30 saves. And yes, it was a compressed period of time. He didn't get any after. But if he's as good as that, chances are when the Rangers win, they're going to be saves because they're not going to blow people out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you just never know. Like I'm happy if Kennedy's still their closer at the end of July and he's up in trade rumors, because it means he's pitching well and he's still the closer. They have no alternatives to him. You know, maybe they'll end up keeping him. Like maybe the offers, he's still Ian Kennedy. Maybe the offers will be so crummy at the deadline as far as prospects that they'll say, you know what, it's not even worth it. Let's just keep him, stabilize the bullpen, be less of an embarrassment down the stretch. We'll see. And but if I get to that far, and maybe I can go mining for a Kennedy replacement and stash him on my bench in July, because I'll maybe be more interested in that than everybody else in the league.
Or the other alternative is they trade him to a quasi contending team. Let's just call them the Reds, who don't have a solid closer. They're playing musical closer every single night. And just trade for Kennedy. It may not cost that much.
How much could he help the Reds right now?
No lie. Right, how many games have they already blown in that bullpen?
Yeah, and he has a 16-0 strikeout to walk. Like he could go in and become. I'm not saying he's their best reliever, because I think TJ Antone's their best reliever, but he could go in and be their best one inning reliever right away.
Yeah. By the way, check out RotoWire's closing grid right now. Ryan Roof is maintaining that for us, and he's been doing a great job. Had him on the podcast a little bit ago. 2 weeks ago, and you know, he just did an update on that and talked about the Reds today. You know, who leads the Reds in saves among their current relievers? Who would you bet it is?
I said Doolittle last week. I think it could be Antone, just in a variety of appearance, but with a low amount. Among their current relievers, I agree with you that the Reds will be a prime candidate to trade for a closer at the deadline. So if we're talking 2.5 months, I could see Antone picking up maybe one save a week. Just maybe he gets used twice a week, multi-inning, stuff like that, but he finishes off one close game a week. I know it didn't work out the last time, but I think it's just bad luck. I could see it maybe being him. I've kind of lost faith. Like I grabbed Doolittle in that labor league a couple weeks ago. I think I might still have him on my bench, but I'm not really interested. I just haven't had space to cut him yet. So I don't have much faith in the other guys. Do you?
I don't. I don't have a lot of faith. I have some faith. I think that there's a chance that Amir Garrett gets it back. Okay. He gave up the homer to Seager, but he's had scoreless outings his other four outings. Lucas Sims, I think, has run into some really bad inherited runner luck. Some got squeezed on Friday night. Twice he had a called third strike to end the game that was called a ball. If you go to MLB.com, you do their tracker, you can see how it shows where the ball is according to the little box and all that. And that's not 100% accurate. I get that. But they were strikes. And you just didn't want to call Kyle strike three. It was wild. And then, he walked in a run. Then they had to have Antone come in. Then Antone had his blow up on Sunday. I don't know, man. Also, a couple of Doolittle stats, because I posted the note on him on RotoWire today. 7 of 9 inherited runners against Doolittle have scored. And right-handers have an OPS of 1,100 plus against him. Those are two big X's against his chances of closing.
It's true. Now, the first one is not necessarily an X, because at least when you close, you don't have any inherited runners. You just pitch the ninth inning. But the OPS, I guess, not always, but the standard closer just starts and finishes the ninth inning. But the 1,100 OPS against righties, which actually makes sense with him being a lefty, that's not going to fly. Isn't it remarkable for you as a Reds fan how last year the Reds had such bad luck hitting? And I mean, they were bad last year, but they also had really bad luck. And that's totally turned around. And the Reds lineup now is producing like we hoped it would produce last year. Like last year, we thought, this is an intriguing lineup. And then they just had terrible BABIP luck all year and couldn't hit. Now they're hitting like crazy, lead the majors in runs scored. At least they did Monday morning. I think they still do. And now the bullpen seems to have kind of fallen apart and have had a little bit of some bad luck, like some bad pitching, but also some bad luck. So it's just funny how it's rare that all the luck, it never seems to line up all the luck. Maybe that's the Kansas City Royals right now, but the luck never seems to all line up.
No, in the grand macro scheme of things, it evens out. For our fantasy purposes, rarely does it even out.
That's right.
That's just tough. It's just the way the cookie crumbles or other whatever sort of phraseology you want to use there. You made three trades this week, not just with me, but in Tout Wars, in L Tout Wars, you made two other trades. What were they?
Yeah, so in NL Tout, I was in the opposite situation that I was in labor. In NL Tout, I, at the auction, grabbed Kenley Jansen for 13, Jake McGee for 4, and Stephen Crichton for 1. And I was right on all three, that all three would be closers, you know, either out of the gate or by May. So you definitely don't need three. You found out you don't need three closers in a mixed, and you definitely don't need three closers in an NL only, a 12 team NL only. You need one. And I had jumped out to a big lead in saves, especially with McGee getting a lot of saves beyond just being the closer, having good fortune that way. So I decided to kind of look around. And just kind of use those guys to deepen my offense. At least you just never know with these guys. The same with Ian Kennedy. Like you traded him, and I think like I traded for him, but you for sure sold Kennedy while his value was up. Hopefully it stays up for my sake, but it may not. So I decided to do the same thing. I felt out people. This is interesting because you like Kenley Jansen, I feel like.
I do.
This is my only share is NL Tout, but I'm not against him. I kind of marketed him around the league a couple weeks ago to some people who our saves are really bunched, as you'd imagine, in NL only, beyond me. And I think Gray Albright's behind me, and then it's pretty bunched after that. Anyways, I marketed Kenley, and people were not having a lot of faith in him. So I just pivoted, and I ended up trading Jake McGee, and I packaged. This is some creative trading. So I also had Tyler Rogers, who's gotten a couple saves. Not really mixed league worthy, but in an NL, you could leave him in just for those times that Gabe Kapler mixes and matches. And I gave up Odubel Herrera, who's starting in center field but not hitting at all, and a bit of fab. I can't remember what it was, if it was $50 or $100 or something. And I got Mike Yastrzemski. So I like Yaz. I think he's I decided I couldn't get a hitter, a healthy hitter of his quality for maybe McGee in that package, but I could get an injured one and then just wait it out for a couple of weeks until he came back. So rather than settle for a lesser hitter, I went for a little bit of a better hitter, but one who I'm going to have to eat some IL time. And eating IL time, as you know, in an NL only is it means basically taking zeros. So I made that trade. And then someone who I was talking about Jake McGee with, I had to message, and I said, it was Phil Hertz. I was talking, I traded. The first one was with Lenny Melnick. And then the second trade, I had been talking about Jake McGee with Phil Hertz. And then I had to message him and say, sorry, I already Lenny made a trade. And that was an overnighter, almost like ours, where I sent the trade, went to bed, woke up, and it had been accepted and in one offer. So anyways, I said to Phil, like, I'd still trade Crichton if you want him. And I traded him for Evan Longoria. So again,
see, I like your second trade better than your first. I just have to recalibrate for an only. I like Yaz, but I guess that's just the mindset of you have to get into like in a mixed league. I'm thinking in terms of like mixed league value. I'd value Kenley over Yaz straight up, and you had to throw in sweeteners and Yaz.
I gave McGee for Yaz, so I kept Kenley. I kept Kenley because nobody seemed to really want to pay for Kenley. So
my listening skills really suck today. Apparently.
But I do agree with you. If we were doing a mixed league draft right now, McGee and Yaz would probably go at similar picks.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
So as you know, in the NL or AL leagues, those hitters get pumped up. So for example, Yaz was a $20 pick at the auction, and I had him valued at pretty close to $20. And, you know, maybe his value's dropped a little bit, but how many closers go for $20? Like two, right? Or an NL auction. So it was me trying to add to my hitting depth. So I can put Longoria in this week, and then, which is good because I have Keston Hira who got sent to the minors, which is terrible. But, and then I can hopefully put Yaz in by this weekend or next week. And it's just me trying to use those surplus of saves to deepen my batting order. And then we'll just see from there. And then giving some guys like Phil and Lenny a chance to, we have a bunch of people in the middle for saves, a chance for those two guys to try to push out of that bunch.
Yeah. The only thing that stinks for you is you miss out on a Coors Field series for Yaz. It's not just that he's hurt. It's a Coors Field that he's hurt for.
Yeah, for sure. So,
but you might get him back on Friday. Did you activate him for this week?
So no, because in Tout, you can activate them right one day after they come back off the, I should have activated him. You know what I wasn't thinking? I should have activated. No, I think our lineups might have locked before I knew about Hira. I can't remember yesterday. I probably should have activated him for Hira. So I'd have him for his first game back. But I think I can activate him and put Hira on my bench the second day that he's back.
Maybe because Hero sent down, you might look into that, see if you can. I might be able to do it now.
You're right. I might. Yeah. That's a good tip. I might be able to do it now and then have him for his first game back, hopefully later this week. But I've been. It's interesting to try to just figure out how much injured players are worth, right, in these leagues. Right. Like how much do you discount? Like I am eating that time with Yaz, and then there's also the possibility that when he comes back, he's not in sync and fully healthy, and like it takes him maybe a week or two to get back to full strength and really start clicking, and I'm going to eat that, and because it's an NL, I'm going to eat that time with him in my lineup. So I thought about all those things and decided I'd still take him maybe at a bit of a discount.
Yeah, I think so too. I guess I think that's about right. I think it's always interesting to see exactly how everyone rates as far as that goes in trades. It's start of a trade season. You know, usually that first month people are still filling themselves out. You're like, sometimes you go into a draft and you understand that, you know, that, okay, well, I'm definitely short on something. Other times you kind of like, you need to let the standing settle, let the injury settle, the playing time battle settle. Whether you have that closer or not, is Ian Kennedy really the guy? Well, turns out he was really the guy, and there's literally nobody else there that can close for the Rangers. So all of a sudden, that value is stabilized, and you can make that deal. I know you're known as a trader. How quickly do you start looking at trades?
I'll look at them right away. I trade in the first week. If it's a known situation where maybe there's someone I just really want, especially when we leave. Well, the drafts or the auctions, but when we leave the auctions and maybe there's someone who went for what I felt like was way below value and I just didn't have the ability to add them because I didn't have money left or something like that, I'll go after them right away. With the closers, I definitely felt like there had to be a waiting out period because there were so many unsettled bullpens. So I didn't even try to market Jake McGee until this weekend. There's so many unsettled bullpens at the beginning of the season that I felt like everyone in my league thought they had one or two closers, but we knew we didn't. Like the guy who had Amir Garrett thought he maybe had a closer, and the guy who had Lucas Sims thought, yeah. And the guy who had Lucas Sims thought maybe he had a closer, and the guy who had Alex Reyes thought he had a closer, and the guy who had Jordan Hicks thought he had a closer. So I needed all those situations to kind of play themselves out. And then I knew that if I was right on McGee and if I was right on Crichton, and Crichton took a while, once Soria was hurt, I thought there's a window here for Crichton, and we'll see if Crichton keeps the job or not. It's not like Evan Longoria was a big return because the Giants as you probably noticed, the Giants are limiting everybody's playing time. Like I noticed Longoria is not in the lineup for the first game of the doubleheader today. Like Gabe Kapler is, I think there might be none. About a week ago, there was only one Giant who qualified for the batting title, and that was Austin Slater. Every other Giant had too few plate appearances to qualify for the batting title. So that's part of getting someone on the Giants right now. And I think that's a big deal in mixed leagues. In an NL, I'll just live with it. No, these guys are all trending towards 450 at bats, but man, in a mixed league, I want Yastrzemski. I don't know if there's many other Giants that I want more than just like a week here or there.
I think Belt's close to that level. He's been hurt, a little banged up. Yeah. You know, he's banged up to start the season. Yeah. Crawford's Posey, had obviously his injuries.
Yeah.
Longo, I mean, I think that's more workload maintenance. We'll see. Yeah. Posey, obviously, you get what you get, and you're pretty darn happy with what you're getting from him right now. But yeah, I mean, the thing is, I think they're optimizing those at-bats a little bit better than other teams are. They actually have real platoons. They're almost weavering here, which I kind of like to see.
Yeah, I love it. And getting Mike Tauchman was smart, I thought.
Oh,
and you know, and I think he went for a little too much in some of the NFBC and at leagues on the weekend because I think people aren't giving enough credit to those platoons, and that when Yastrzemski's back, it's going to be a really crowded outfield and Tauchman would have to really hit to escape those platoons. But from a Giants perspective, I think they're doing some really smart stuff and they're winning. So I'm not going to sit here and complain about them because it doesn't help us in fantasy. You just have to roll with this and assume that most of these players are getting a couple of days off every week.
Yeah. I think you're making some good observations about them. I want to talk a little bit about George Springer. Let's move on from trades, start talking injuries. Springer, and I know there's other bigger news, but I want to talk Springer in part because we have a listener question on Springer, but also you're the Jays guy. He gets, you know, has the two homer game, but then leaves because he's feeling fatigued, sits out yesterday, doesn't even pinch hit. They got Jake Diekman in the ninth against Danny Jansen, against Kevin Biggio, sitting duck, lefty on lefty. Springer's just sitting there on the bench. Trevino's already been used. It's not like they're going to bring in the righty to face him. doesn't even get the pinch hit appearance there. That's not just rest to me. That means I think something's wrong with him still. What do you think?
Yeah, 100%. I do. He's not fully healthy. Like you said, like if he was just getting a day off or kind of a day off, like you bring him in that situation, like to help you win a game, like you're in the ninth inning of a one run game, you bring him in that situation. So he's not completely healthy. It's frustrating. It's disappointing. We've talked about Springer before mm-hmm. on here where like he's someone who's only played more than 140 games once in his career. And so these situations with him seem to be kind of part of the package. It's kind of, it's disappointing that it's happened right off the start of the season, but I can see a real situation where it's going to take him maybe a couple weeks before they start using him. And hopefully those couple weeks goes well, right? So that he, right. So if it goes poorly, he could be back on the IL, but I it would depend on my league size. In a 15, I'd have to roll out George Springer. In a 12 this week, I think you would have had to have thought twice about it when you saw that he wasn't in the lineup Monday, and they weren't even considering using him in the lineup on Monday. He's going to get another day or two off this week.
I think so too. I am a little bit concerned about this. And mm-hmm. you know, we say, well, this is his 20 games. No, it's 20 games now, and he's still on pace to miss 18 more probably if all holds true. You know, it's not like that used up his injury quota. That's not unfortunately that's right. how it works. Got a Springer related question. Alfonso asks in trade talks, would you trade Springer for Ian Anderson and Noah Syndergaard? Obviously, someone drafted Thor knowing that you're going to get him back later. I don't know if this is a keeper or not, or for that matter, which side Alfonso is on. Evaluating this trade, what do you think? Springer for Anderson and Thor?
I think assuming not keeper, I think I would just stick with Springer and deal with the lumps of the next couple of weeks and hope mm-hmm. that he's awesome after that. Although I'm totally on board with Ian Anderson being a pretty good pitcher, but I think I don't think Thor moves the needle enough for me. There's just so much unknown there with him that I feel like I'd want Ian Anderson and someone who is more of like a bankable asset for the rest of mm-hmm. the season. What do you think?
I mean, I think it all depends on your evaluation of Anderson. It's fair. I mean, you're put it this way, Springer, if you're starting the, like, if you compare draft value, Springer is obviously worth more than Anderson, but taking in the injury factor, that probably ratchets it down. Yeah. I mean, and let's face it, if you've been getting pounded with your pitching a little bit, maybe that pushes it a little closer. Thor is a wild card. I mean, if you can stash him on IL, it's one thing. If you don't have IL spots, it's another, where it makes it a little bit harder because you can't stream pitchers as readily. So I think if you have IL spots, you can stash Thor there, then I think I'd be more inclined to do that. If you're on the other side, you're trading for Springer. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I like it. I think I like it if you're trading for Springer, just in the sense of like, so his 2021 value is a little shot already. Like we've got zeros mm-hmm. for a month and we'll see how the next couple of weeks goes. That being said, he was a fourth round. I found about a fourth round pick before this injury from May 20th or June 1st or something on, he could perform at that level. And this, right. and the Jays offense still looks like really good. Like it will, I think it will click at some point and be really good, but Guerrero's done everything that people were hoping. Bichette looks like a stud, you know, Teoscar's finally back. Gurriel will, I think, get going. Like Springer could be hitting leadoff in like from June 1st on, he could be hitting leadoff in a lineup that's top two or three in the American League.
You know, does Biggio ever get it going?
I worry about Biggio, and he might be my favorite Blue Jay. I love how he can go from, he hasn't played them well, but I love how he just, you know, with no ego goes from one position to the next from day to day. And, you know, it doesn't, I don't know if a lot of major leaguers could do that where, you know, he did a great, played a ball great off the wall from left field last night. And like, he's barely been in left field all season and, you know, gets this tough play in left field and throws someone out at second base. And I just love it. But from a fantasy perspective, Rob Silver's been pretty vocal about this on Twitter, and I think Rob's right. Like he's not.
Rob's been vocal on Twitter. No, yeah. this Rob Silver, right? Yeah. Not
so Rob. Canadian politics have been quiet enough that he's been able to pivot back to baseball for a while. But anyways, Biggio's not handling fastballs at all, and that's a big problem because pitchers can throw fastballs quite easily if you're not going to be able to handle them. But I do think that Biggio, he's someone who throughout the minors always figured things out. I do think he'll figure things out, but but I am worried. This isn't someone where I'm just like, oh, it's a slow start. He'll come around. Like, no, I'm worried.
Yeah.
If this trade offer was Biggio for those two guys, I would take it in a heartbeat. I trade Biggio for Ian Anderson in a heartbeat for sure. Yeah.
Some people are talking about dropping Biggio straight up, which obviously that's a mixed format there, but anyways, you know, it's funny. We're bringing up we got to finish up our Jays talk and then we'll move on to the remaining part of the podcast here too. But Teoscar being back, that's big. That one, I think that's big. That lengthens the lineup a lot. Grichik's been good. Grichik's been really good. And the thing is, he's kind of got a, you know, remember he was the guy that was getting pushed down in drafts. He's kind of earned that spot now.
Yeah, just showing how hard it is to predict playing time. Like everybody was kind of hot on Rowdy Tellez and looking at his stats from last year and was like, oh, Rowdy will be, he'll be the extra guy. He'll be the DH. And then in the end, Grichik out hit Tellez by a massive amount at the beginning of the season, pushed Tellez all the way to the minors. And, you know, and now Grichik seems totally stable. Like they need Grichik's bat in the lineup right now. Even when the Jays, when Springer is in the lineup, I think it'll be, you know, Gurriel getting days off. Right. Grichik will get a day off here and there, but they'll find a way to keep Grichik in the lineup most days. Teoscar being back is really good as long as Teoscar's hitting like he did last year. The one thing about him is he's a bit of an all or nothing.
He is.
Type guy. So I think there'll be some highs and lows this year, but there'll probably should be some times where he's really raking and really makes that lineup dangerous.
Yeah. I want to bring up one other slumper brought up in the comments. Fuse 13 brought him up. Is Andrew Vaughn a slap hitter? Bibat Juice says he just cut Vaughn. Vaughn's in the lineup today. He's batting six. You know, the White Sox are down Eloy, they're down. They just lost Luis Robert. That's a bad one there. Hey, still have Adam Eaton. Yay. And they just signed Brian Goodwin. Who knows how much he's going to build? They cut in the playing time. Tony might be forced to play Vaughn a little bit there. Vaughn hasn't homered though yet. He hasn't hit for power at all. Are you concerned?
About him as a player? No. About how they use him? Yeah. So I just, La Russa doesn't seem to want to use him. And when he does use him, he puts him low in the lineup and he inexplicably puts players who aren't very good in front of Vaughn sometimes in the lineup. I said last week when we were recording that I thought maybe they would send him to the minors when the minor league season started and just let him get full-time at bats for a couple of weeks and get rolling. They didn't do that or they haven't done it yet. I still think it's a possibility, but I think the Luis Robert injury like maybe helps him stay, but they don't seem like they really want to use him. I don't think he's a slap hitter, but I think you got to either roll with this guy or not. Like either got to put him in the lineup. He's young. Like you got to put him in the lineup 6 days a week for a couple of weeks and let him get going, or put him in AAA and let him do that. And then bring him up when you're ready to play him. But it seems like management had this plan for Vaughn and nobody told La Russa. Like they told all of us on Twitter, but nobody told La Russa, who definitely doesn't have Twitter. And I don't know. He doesn't seem like he wants to use him.
I think La Russa had this plan for Vaughn and he didn't tell anybody else, including Vaughn. Who knows? Maybe he told Vaughn himself. I don't know. But yeah, it's tough. He's in the lineup today against the Reds. Who knows if they play? Rain's going to be an issue in Cincy, but that's something to watch for there. I mean, they played in a lot of crappy weather aside from their first road trip on the West Coast. And, you know, playing every other day is tough, or play two or three days and then sit a day or two. It can be tough. And it can really be, you know, especially when you're trying to establish yourself at a new position, no less.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense for a player who's so young and is so inexperienced. Like, his no minor league career, really, to speak of. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like play him. Play him or put him in AAA and play him and then bring him up in a month or 2 weeks or whatever. But whenever you have a meeting with La Russa and you're like, okay, so he's playing every day from now on, right? And then everybody's on the same page. So, but this Robert injury could be helpful for him, but not if La Russa's mind's closed to him playing every day. By the way, Robert an automatic drop in all leagues? Assuming you don't have unlimited IL. And
right, that. Of course. Yeah. I mean, I think we can stipulate to that. Yeah, 12 to 16 weeks without any baseball activity.
Yeah.
Say he begins baseball activity after 12 weeks, it's at the minimum. Well, then you're looking at probably like a September 1st return because you're going to need a month to be able to rehab up a little bit, especially with such a major injury.
Yeah.
The one thing, talking about Vaughn, talking about, you know, now all these injured guys, minor league season begins today. At least we can have rehab assignments. We don't have alternate training campsite anymore. No more bureaucracy. We actually have minor leagues. So yay, yay us. But I think that's going to start changing things. And it might change how teams handle younger players too. I think, you know, we haven't seen Kelnick. We haven't, asked Robert, and I'm kind of launching another stuff, but we haven't seen Kelnick or Wander or a couple other young prospects. We might start to see them after the week or two of playing. They might push that up pretty quickly. I think Wander Franco sitting in a lot of leagues right now that where he's drafted and dropped, say in the NFBC, that allows you to pick him up. I would pick him up Sunday. If you want to be in on it at all, that's the time to do it because his price is going to go way up in Fab otherwise. So just a thought there. Before we launch into talk about some other strugglers, some other news items, quick note from our Blue Wave sponsors. All right. The Mets, they fired their hitting coaches, not just one, but two hitting coaches yesterday, Fred. The Mets are off to a prolific slump with their hitting, really bad. I mean, it's not even confined to DeGrom starts. It's all around. They're really struggling to hit. Francisco Lindor being the chief guy, hitting 163. You know, he has one homer. He has one double. Weirdly, the ESPN announcers were complaining about his 13 walks. I don't see how that's a problem, but unless you're saying he's more passive and not hitting the first pitch enough, I guess. But, you know, that's how he plays. He's once drawn 70 walks in baseball. That's part of the feature of him is he will take a walk or two. What in your eyes is wrong with Francisco Lindor, and what's your reaction to the Mets move?
So firing both hitting coaches is fine, I guess. They're not hitting. It's kind of funny they fired them both. Like they just kind of were sitting around the office and they thought, I don't know which one of these guys is the problem. Let's just get rid of both of them. I get it. You're going to bring in someone else. Maybe he doesn't want the other guy there. So Lindor is a huge part of the problem. Like he hits second and he plays every game. Like he's so durable. It's one of his best qualities. So he's a huge part of the problem. Like you've got a guy with a sub 500 OPS hitting second. And I have seen some games lately, right, where the Mets have hit a little bit. I think they got five runs last night. They got some runs Sunday night. Lindor's killing them. Like if he could get anything going, they probably get an extra run or so in each of those games. When you look at his stats, like, I think he's going to come around. I kind of feel like he's the ultimate.
Yeah, of course.
Buy low. I think he's the ultimate buy low right now. So I would buy him low, except the only two leagues. Oh, I could buy him in friends and family. I can make an offer for him.
Because you have him in all the others. Already,
in the, all right? The others. I know. So, yeah. So I'm not selling low. Like I'm worried about Cabin Biggio. I'm worried about Keston Hira. I'm only kind of worried about Lindor. It's the contract and maybe like, maybe he's just, maybe my concern with Lindor is that this unlucky, his BABIP's 181. Like it's over 100 points lower in his career BABIP. If his BABIP was his career BABIP, he'd be hitting 260, 270 and everything would be fine. His BABIP's just really low. What I do worry about is that this gets into his head. Like so far his plate discipline's been amazing, but we have seen before where guys are really unlucky and then they start pressing and then they start doing things that they wouldn't normally do to press. And then it all falls apart. So I hope he's smart enough to not fall victim to that and just keep doing what he's doing and hope it comes around.
What would it say if you're looking to trade for him, you're friends and family, don't look at who has him right now, just
okay.
In a vacuum, who would you offer? And think that that's a fair offer.
Okay, so if we were just going to go rounds, he was a second round pick, early to mid second round pick. I'm going to say that I might start by offering like fifth, sixth round picks, and then see where things go from there. That's just kind of my guess. Is like I think his value. I'm not saying his going forward value is fifth or sixth round. How about this? If we were drafting today, where would Lindor go? And stats only count from today forward. He's not going in the second round anymore. And I don't think he's going to go in the third round. I think he's going to go in the fourth or fifth round.
So this is kind of tougher for me because I wasn't
you weren't in on Lindor. Yeah.
I wasn't paying his draft price, but at the same time, there's a price for everyone. I mean, okay. So I'm looking at the fourth round hitters. Let's just start there in friends and family. So that's a 16 teamer. Rosarena went 4-1. I'd rather have Lindor.
I'll take Lindor.
Real Muto, one catcher league, went 4-2. I think I'd take Real Muto.
Yeah, I might too. One catcher league, I'll take Lindor.
Yeah. Okay, that's a fair offer right there then maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem is Darno's out, Molina's out. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of catchers are out. Mm-hmm. Milwaukee lost both their catchers. Our precious Alejandro Kirk got hurt and is going to be out for a while, though you don't even, it's not on your watch. You're just the advocate for him.
Yeah.
Whit Merrifield, I would too. Yeah. Jose Abreu, kind of a slumper on your team. Oh, totally. Interesting. Yes. Here we go.
He's on.
Are you going to offer that?
He's on three or four of my teams. So I would trade Jose Abreu right now for Lindor.
Okay. There you go.
There could be one of my offers.
That's a deal that could get done, I think.
Yeah.
Although the Abreu slumped a little bit, and his team's circumstances aren't nearly as good as they were earlier because he's lost Eloy and he's lost Robert.
Yeah.
I went next, took Aaron Judge at 4-5. I would rather have Judge than Lindor. Even with the injury.
Judge guy, I'll take Lindor.
Okay. Springer next.
Lindor.
That's a nice little stretch. Abreu, Judge, Springer.
Yeah, at least Lindor is healthy. I'll take Lindor.
Yeah, I would too. Yordan Alvarez?
I'm not a Yordan Alvarez guy, but I have zero shares. I'll take Lindor.
And Yahoo qualifies at outfield, by the way.
Okay, I'll still take Lindor.
Eugenio Suarez?
Lindor.
Third and short eligible?
Lindor.
Lindor, easy Lindor.
Yeah.
Although Luke Voit, hurt, man, fourth round was a bad round for our hitters here.
Yeah.
And Carrasco is in this round too. Javi Baez, I'd rather have Lindor.
Lindor.
Alonso at 416.
Lindor.
Pete Alonso.
Yeah, I'll take Lindor. So
I take Lindor almost over all those except for Whit Merrifield. And I think I have some bias because I'm the one that drafted Judge. I don't know.
Right.
On Judge.
What about late third? Are some of those guys, let's
keep
page.
Going backwards here. Nolan Arenado at 315. I'm just looking at hitters, by the way.
I'm not an Arenado guy. I'll take Lindor.
Starling Marte's hurt. You'll take Lindor. Ozzie Albies, 313.
Oh, that's a really good
one. You'll take Albies.
I'll take Albies.
Yeah.
So there's my dividing line. I would not offer my third round Albies. I would offer my fourth round Abreu. That's where I think that if we were drafting now, Lindor would go. Is like right around that 3-4 turn. Maybe fourth round, something like that. So, yeah. The other one would be that if you took, I don't have a name popping into my head right now, but if you took someone even in like the eighth or ninth round, who's off to a great start. No one's just totally popping into my head right now, but someone like that who you're like, offering this guy for Lindor on April 1st would have been insulting. But now my guy's one of the leaders in RBIs and things like that. Then I think that's another really interesting offer.
It is. It is. Is that a change of skill or is that, just a change of value?
Or just a hot month? Like if you have someone who's, you're not going to offer like Jesus Aguilar or Nate Lowe or one of these guys for Francisco Lindor, that's insulting. But if you have, there's a question in the chat, Byron Buxton for Lindor.
Yeah, two guys at the same time, by the way. That's like sharing a brain.
What do you think? Who would you want for the rest of the year?
Oh, man. Recency bias is just like pounding my head right now. But
I know.
I think Lindor. I think that's because
me too,
of
but
the
barely. That's a
the,
tough one.
The inherent injury risk with Buxton makes it that way. But
I know.
Otani's another interesting name there, too. It depends on the form. No. Yeah. I would say Otani the hitter straight up for Lindor is a very interesting offer.
Yeah, I'll take Lindor over all these guys. But again, I'm the guy who drafts Lindor in the first place. I think at some point he'll get some better luck. Things will calm down. Everyone will get off his back. And then I think sometime this summer he'll quietly put together a couple months where we get five homers and four steals in each month. Something like that. Like a couple really nice months. I don't think he's going to have like a 9-homer, 8-steal month or something memorable. But I think he'd go back to being what we expected him to be.
Yeah, and there's a holder's bias there too when you draft someone like that. But people don't remember though. The Mets were a top five offense last year. If you look at all the advanced metrics, they were right up there. And then they added Lindor. They added what they thought was an improvement at catcher and McCann over Ramos, so that hasn't necessarily worked out that way. I mean, it's been kind of a stuck in the muck sort of year. And again, the weather has been terrible on the East Coast. It's going to get better. Things are going to get better there. Yeah, I think you're right. I might even trade Judge for Lindor if that were the case. Watch me get an offer on that later.
Yeah, that'd be tar harder now. But you're right. It's not just Lindor. Like Jeff McNeil's off to a bit of a slow start. Dom Smith's off to a slow start. So I think the whole thing will turn around. But he needs to be the catalyst almost to turn it around just because of the lineup spot. And I don't think they should move him. Like he's one of their best. He's maybe their best player. They just paid him like $300 million. You can't move him out of the two hole in a month. Move him out of the two hole if you want to put him clean up or something like that. But you can't. I don't think you drop Lindor down to seventh or something to try to take the pressure off or something. I think
Leave him. Well, so fire a hitting coach instead, because it's his fault that Lindor is not hitting.
That's right.
And
that's
all the players are upset, by the way, too. So maybe they just wanted to get him mad. I don't know.
But yeah. Yeah.
By the way, I'd argue, I'm looking at friends and family. I was thinking, well, change, you know, Judge for a short upgrade at shortstop. It seems great. Well, I have Marcus Semien at shortstop. I mean, meanwhile, I'm starting Clint Frazier, Brad Miller, and Mike Tauchman in the outfield along with Judge. What position is the scarce one now?
I know.
I mean, I got shortstop. Yaz hurt, Santander hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been using Sam Haggerty. I mean, maybe I should have drafted more depth in the outfield is the real answer here. But my gosh, outfield is pretty thin.
Yeah. You and Scott often talk about that. I find on Monday or Sunday night, Monday morning, that outfield is really thin. And it is. Like I am in all my leagues struggling to find outfielders. One thing I have in that friends and family is a lot of hitting depth. And I actually don't have pitchers on my bench as much as I normally would, because I have found this hitting depth and I don't want to get rid of it. Like, cause I know I have a bunch of outfielders on my bench. I have Austin Hayes, who I grabbed when he was hurt. I have Alex Kirilov, who I grabbed a few days before they called.
Boy, he's heating up, by the way.
Yeah. He was heating up on my bench, unfortunately, for a few of those big performances, but it's because I have some extra outfielders. So, I finally made the switch and benched Andrew McCutcheon. Who's another
guy. So did the Phillies. So yeah, that's good timing.
So,
boy, he's been terrible.
Exactly. But there's no outfield depth out there. I could probably trade McCutcheon for something right now. Yeah. Something useful. Like he still probably works his way back into a starting job. So.
And then I made this point on the XM show today, but I was stoked that Tim Schuler and I were able to pick up Harrison Bader in one of our main event leagues this week. You know, he's going to play at least 5 days a week, maybe all seven, you know, because he's he's good in defense, some power, some speed. And when the league is hitting .233, who cares if he's a batting average risk? You know, it's the Tyler O'Neill approach. You know, you hope for that combo. And if he doesn't hurt you in batting average, all the better.
Yeah, totally. You have to get used to looking at these players, especially in those 15s, like when you're doing your NFBC bids on Sunday, with pulling up player after player and seeing 205, 213, 197, and remembering that it's small sample size and a league-wide low batting average. And seeing those numbers is almost like when you used to see 230 or 225, now you see 200. I think with that outfielder, the lack of outfielders, the guy who really drove that home with me was Jonathan Daza from the Rockies. He has zero walks this year. He has one home run, zero steals, and people were rushing out in NFBC a couple weeks ago to bid decent amounts for him. I'd say more than 50, and once in a while, maybe more than 100, but people were rushing out to give serious bids. And I know he's on the Rockies and we love that when he's at home, but this is a guy with a 638 OPS but it's people just needing someone in their outfield and seeing Rockies and thinking, well, maybe there's some potential there.
Yeah, that's right. There are, I'm looking at the NFBC main event standings right now, and there are, how many teams are in the main? There are 645 teams in the main, so like roughly 320 in batting average. I want to kind of see what the middle is in batting average. And I guarantee you it's like it's not great. It's got to be in the 250s would be my guess. Like, so
I was going to guess lower. I was going to guess 240s.
Yeah. It is roughly, this is something I should probably have looked up ahead of time here, but
sometimes these conversations flow.
Yes, they just do. 244.
There it is. Yeah.
Is fantasy league average. That's crazy. Cause you're skimming off the top.
I know.
That's really wild to me. So at any rate, so I thought that was kind of fun there. Talking about Harrison Bader, Bibap Juice mentions this. He goes, This is something that was going around by Razball was forwarding this around. The Bader Pokemon story and notes floating around today is pretty amazing. That so he's in, he was trying to sell Pokemon, but then he revealed to this guy he was dealing with this thing with the, he had polyps in his nose, and that's why he's having bad seasons the last couple of years. So who knew? Who knew? Harrison Bader.
Who knew? All the research we do, and there's things we just will never know.
You'll never know that.
Until they want you to.
Yeah. And that's not even a matter of like, you know, reporting being in the clubhouse. That's like something that's personal in nature. You know, you could have a report in the clubhouse every day and you might not have known that. Although maybe you would have. Maybe just hanging around hearing them talk about it, that might actually change things a little bit. But with these Zoom calls, you're definitely not going to hear it. Talking about outfielders. Now let's talk about somebody good. Cedric Mullins says hot start sustainable. You asked three hits, another homer last night. I have him on 1 out of 17 leagues, Fred. And I was just like hand waving him away. It's like, oh, he's not going to, you know, they're not going to sit Austin Hayes for him. Well, no, they're not. But the, you know, turns out there's other places for him to play too. Mullins looks like he's in for the long haul.
Yeah, I mean, some things are a little elevated. Like in a league where the BABIP keeps going down and down, his is 384 this year.
Right.
He is a speedy player, but you know, so that's like some regression is coming for him. But if he can stay hitting leadoff, if he can hit 270 even like he did last year, mix in a bit of speed. He's only got 2 steals so far. I think he can do a lot better than that, actually, at a pace going forward. He's not striking out too much. The power is up a little bit this year. He's a good example of, like you said, like we were a little worried about playing time because they had, you know, Mancini and Mountcastle and him and Hayes and DJ Stewart. In the end, like, if you see talent, and I'm not saying we necessarily totally saw this with Mullins, but if you see talent, just go for it because Hayes has already been hurt and Stewart's already been hurt at times and Mountcastle can't hit right now. And like there's opportunity. And I feel like that's the same on basically, it's like we talked about with Randall Grichuk. Like if a player can hit, if you think a player can hit, just grab him and just assume that injuries and slumps will just allow him to get in the lineup.
And even absent that, like, the mixing and matching, days off, load management. These are all things that that kind of tend to work out. Yeah. With Mullen specifically, walk rate the last 2 years was around 5%. It's up to 8.7% this year as a speedy guy. We like that. Yeah. K's dropped from 24% to 19%. The ISO is, this is where he's hitting the ball a lot harder this year. He's getting a lot more bang for his buck. His ISO is 220 this year. It was 136 last year, 0.62 the year before, 0.062 the year before. Hat tip to Justin Mason, by the way. He was touting Mullins all throughout draft season and landed him elsewhere there. So, yeah, when an industry colleague nails a guy like that and he's on Mullins Island, you got to give him credit. So, kudos, Justin, on that. I'm persuaded. I mean, he's not going to hit 330 the rest of the year, but he's going to play the rest of the year. He's earned himself that playing time.
Yeah, he's going to play. He's not going to hit 330. I think his power is actually also going to go down. I mean, it's great that he's hitting the ball harder right now. One thing, just the scout in me says that Mullins is 5'8". So not a lot of players at 5'8 can maintain power like the way he has so far. Like he's on kind of like a 25 homer pace. I don't see that happening. I think from this point forward, if he could play on a 15 homer pace, that would be fine just from this point forward. And, but I think his steals could actually come up a bit as the power dries up. I could see him stealing bases at a slightly higher rate. And if Mullins had 2 fewer homers, but 2 more steals and everything else is the same right now, you'd be just as interested in him with the scarcity of steals. So yeah, I think he's someone who's rosterable in every league, even the 10 teams right now. But I could see if he slows down being not a guy you want in your 10 team lineup, but still a guy, I think he'll be a 12 team guy like the rest of the way.
Yeah, I think you're right. I want to talk some pitching and then we'll finish with a couple of questions. But before that, a quick note. On Moon Baseball Road Trips, the complete guide to all the ballparks with beer, bites, and sights nearby. Arriving just in time for the 2021 season, this brand new Moon Travel Guides book is the ultimate guide to baseball. This book is as much as a travel guide as it is a dive into the classic American road trip. Vibrant fan communities, baseball history, and of course, the 30 incredible MLB cities. 7 road trip routes with detailed itineraries. It's organized by region, so you can drive through loop through the Midwest, cruise along the West Coast, or hit the ballparks from Boston to DC. There's insider advice for visiting each ballpark, so not just how to catch a game, but tips on snagging tickets, securing the best seats, and the insider scoop on the best bars and restaurants nearby. This insider scoop comes from author and lifelong baseball fan Timothy Malcolm. He served as a senior writer and editor at Phillies Nation, written stories for the Hardball Times, and has been featured on Mets blogs and Yahoo's Big League Stew. He's also hosted two baseball podcasts himself, including the Phillies Nation podcast. To write this book, Tim hit the road and explored everything from Boston to Seattle to Phoenix and the Bay, bringing the experience of the game to readers across the world. For the ultimate baseball experience this summer, order your copy of Moon Baseball Road Trips, available at online retailers, your local bookstore, or at www.moon.com. Man, I want to go on a baseball road trip. This would be pretty awesome. I wonder if he has tips to Dunedin for you, Fred.
Yeah, the first tip for me getting to Dunedin would be to somehow sneak through the border. So
yes,
the way things are right now. So
well, you can come in. You just can't come back home.
That's true. I think do I have to quarantine when I come in? I think I do.
It's Florida. It's Florida. You probably don't have to.
You're right. It's Florida.
What am I thinking? I don't know. Yeah. That's gratuitous. Sorry. Yeah. But anyhow, you may not. I don't know how it works because I have not attempted to. But we'll see. Let's talk a little pitching. Tyler Anderson was awesome last night. Took a no-hitter into the seventh. Unfortunately, he also got the Jacob DeGrom run support package and got nothing and liked it to show for it. But he's been pretty good this year. He's been missing some bats. He's got 31 strikeouts and 33 innings after yesterday's outing at 3.24 ERA, 1.14 WHIP. There's some things to like about him. Did you use him in any two steps?
I haven't been tout NL. I don't know if I used him anywhere else. I think he's a fringe guy though in mixed leagues now. Him being on the Pirates makes him a little less appealing, but really great strikeout to walk. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he's a fringe guy, like just a streamer. You could have used him this week. The Padres start scared me a little bit. Just the way things work, that start will be better than the one on the weekend. Just wait and see. But that seems to often be the way it goes. But I think he's a matchups guy from one week to the next. By the way, speaking of, you mentioned DeGrom and the run support. So DeGrom has been, breaking news, DeGrom has been scratched tonight.
Oh, no.
Yeah, side tightness.
That is big breaking news.
Side tightness. DeGrom scratched, Kevin Gausman on the IL. Injuries in baseball never stop.
Oh, no reason on Gausman. So there is that. Ugh.
Yeah. But side tightness, I think with DeGrom is not a big deal. Like I could see that either being like just push back or miss a start or something like that. But, this is something I think with DeGrom that like, I felt like early in draft season, people with DeGrom, he was kind of going like seventh, eighth, kind of with Cole and Bieber. And we were discussing who you like best. Then DeGrom started throwing 100 in spring training and everybody just pushed him, which is fine. To the top of the first round. Like he certainly has been better than advertised, but there have been some, for a guy who's made a lot of starts in the last few years, there sometimes are these little nagging things with him. So I'm not going to like lose my head over this. I don't even know if he'll go on the IL. I wouldn't be surprised if he starts in 2 or 3 days. We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah. Those high velocity guys, you always get scared anytime they get scratched, but you know, DeGrom's good for like one scratch a year. It seems like we all freak out.
Yep.
And then he's fine. So we'll see.
But then he makes his starts. That's right. 12 starts last year, 32, 32, and 31 the previous 3 years. So like you said, like maybe like one scratch or one pushback and then he's fine. So I'm going to treat it like that for now.
Yeah. I am too. The other thing too is with Gausman, by the way, Andrew Baggerly says that it's no reason, but likely temporary and vaccine related.
Okay.
He wasn't going to pitch in Coors Field anyhow. So no harm done as far as that goes. So we'll see about that one there. But yeah, you don't like seeing it, but it seems like, you know, because sometimes you think it's short term and then you get Corbin Burnes who missed a start on Sunday. We still don't really know much about Corbin Burnes.
No.
Did you leave him active? And did you have him anywhere?
Unfortunately, I have no Burnes. So I did not get Burned, but I would actually be happy to get Burnes because that would have mean I would have got Burnes throughout April. So yeah,
absolutely.
But I think I would have left him active.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
I tweeted this out. I wrote about it. I am opening myself up to the Gombering this week with not one, but two streamers, Nick Pivetta tonight and Martin Perez tomorrow. I have a lot of those. In leagues where I didn't get McClanahan or Lynch, I got Pivetta or like the ultimate booby prize in Martin Perez.
I grabbed Martin Perez in one league, I think, mm-hmm. maybe two. I was a little more, I partner with Jeff Zimmerman on a lot of those NFBCs. He was not right. as hot on Perez as I was. I see the Tigers numbers against lefties this year. And I know you tweeted out like here, basically like here's your Tigers primer for the week. And tweeted out the six pitchers who were scheduled to face them this week. Out of all of them, Perez was the one I was interested in the most because he's a lefty, and the Tigers have been anemic, but especially against lefties. So I don't think you'll get burned on Perez. I think that's totally fine, and I think you'll be fine with Pivetta too. I don't see how in the 15 team leagues, like how do you not stream against the Tigers right now?
I agree.
Anyone who you think will throw five, that's the only concern with maybe Perez. Is he has a couple starts this year under five, but those starts weren't against the Tigers. So I think you stream almost anyone. Maybe not like a minor league call-up type guy or a guy who, you know, on a pitch count, he's only throwing 60 pitches or something, but anyone else, I think I would stream against the Tigers until they start to get their act together. And who knows when that'll happen. Cause the lineup isn't good. It doesn't even look good. Like it's not good on paper.
No, I agree. And if they won't always be this bad, I just remember last year I have nightmares of Randy Dobnik. Being great, great. Oh, Tigers. Yay. And like three times the Tigers got to him. I was like, really?
Yeah.
Now Randy Dobnik's in the minors.
It's that whole process thing, right? Sometimes you do everything right and you get burned. And the Gomber thing was a little sketchy because his walks are really high this year. And Joe Ross, you know, we had some trepidation about. But if you get burned on Pivetta or Perez this week, it's just bad luck. Like the process there is totally good.
Yep. I think you're right. I did end up with a lot of Shane McClanahan. Now his starts aren't as strong. His matchups aren't as strong, but man, he's a fun pitcher. I made it a priority to get him because I think he's more than a streamer.
That's what it is, right? Like you're getting him for this week, but you're not. Like you're getting him. Right. I think he's someone who, even if they optioned for a week, you would hold him. Like just if they are just playing games of service time or whatever the Rays are doing, because the Rays are just wacky. Like if he goes down for a week here and there, you hold him because he looks really good. He looks like someone who they just can't deny having like on their pitching staff. So I think you just get him, and it's almost like Michael Kopech with the White Sox. Like it looks really good. So you don't know if he's going to be long relief or starter or whatever. You just get him and hope for the best. So I think getting him is good. And this week will be that last week was the McClanahan Palooza. This week will be the Lynch Palooza from the Royals.
That was my next guy on my list to bring up. And, but one more thing on McClanahan is like, if they do have like one of those weird five game weeks, you know, they'll send him down for that. Yeah. Just keep everybody on schedule and all how that goes. But fortunately, that's not on the horizon the next 2 weeks at least. So I'm in on him. I did get Daniel Lynch in AL Tout Wars. He was my second priority behind McClanahan. Got outbid for him there. Lynch, his command wasn't good last night. Mm-hmm. I think he walked four and four two thirds. Especially early on, it felt like he was kind of trying to feel it out a little bit. That first inning, he was kind of nibbling and giving up some rocket outs. He settled in after that, I thought. And then the fifth inning happened, and they get that double play ball. You know, he gets the full five in and doesn't give up all three runs. But that's, you know, if is doing a lot of work there too. You know, it's like you put those guys on in the first place. Nonetheless, I was reasonably encouraged with this start.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, I think the control, we'll see if he makes a second start this week before Sunday's Fab run, we'll see like what his control looks like in that start. I think that second start would decide whether, you know, he goes for 120 or 150 or whether he goes for 50 or 40 or something like that. Right. But like you said, like he walked two in the first inning, he balked in the second inning. Like he just had maybe the look of someone who was a little nervous. And then he settled in after that. So I think if you believe in his talent and things are going well for the Royals, they're in a division without a lot of great lineups. And I think he's totally worth an ad right now, whether he's worth like a big bid or not. I think maybe not. I'm not typically a guy who makes like triple digit bids on starting pitchers. They have to look like really, really like a lock to me to be good. Like for like these pitching prospects. So I probably won't get him if he does really well on the weekend, but Yeah, I think he looks like a keeper. I would rather have McClanahan right now.
Yeah, I think I would too. I think my range of prices on McClanahan was like from 57 to 117, I think was the range I was bidding on. With Lynch, I think I got him for 53 and Tout. I think I'll probably stick around that without broadcasting league exactly what I'm going to do, but not that my league mates are asking for insight from me. They have their own plans, but anyways, I we'll see. I mean, he gets the White Sox at home, and then next week he gets the White Sox on the road. Normally I'd be like, not good, but no Eloy, no Robert, and Abreu hasn't been Abreu yet. But I mean, that could change in a hurry. Tim Anderson's still crushing. Abreu does have two grand slams already, but they're not the same lineup that we were afraid of at the beginning of the year. We're semi afraid of them still, especially in KC. I'm not as afraid. Let's put it that way.
That's right. I mean, if you were going to settle on a $50-ish bid for Lynch, you can basically just watch his start on the weekend and decide whether you're going to get him or not. If he walks four again on the weekend, your $50 bid will probably work. If he walks zero, if he throws six shutout or something, you're not getting him for $50. But you can do the Fred Zinke price and force, like finish second plan, and you'll get, if you do that in five leagues, you'll get him in one.
Act now. Operators are standing by.
Totally. So I did it with Garrett Richards on Sunday. I think I probably spent 25 on him in every league, and I think I got him in two. So, I was interested in Garrett Richards after the 17-1 strikeout to walk last week, but it's still like Garrett Richards, and he started the season really poorly. I wasn't bidding a ton, but I did the just price and force and see where you get him kind of thing.
My shoulder hurt just mentioning his name, but wait, that's because I got the injection there. But good question here. Who's the next call up starter after McClanahan? I think it's Logan Gilbert on the Mariners. I think that'll be a couple of weeks away. They already had one starter go down. I mean, Margavicious is terrible. I think there's some room there. The only thing I don't like is they're committed to the 6-man rotation, which automatically kind of limits his value.
Nate Pearson is another one to think about. I know he's been up, but barely. And the Jays,
isn't he starting today?
I think he is. Yeah. So the Jays have sent him down because they want him to work on a few things, which is a little concerning because they are desperate for starting pitching right now to fill that rotation, and they didn't use him. But at the same time, like, we know how talented Pearson is, and I think a couple little tweaks in the minors and he could be up in a couple weeks.
Conspiracy theory here is, he has options available. It's the same thing as a rehab start, but they don't have to pay a major league salary for it.
Yeah, it's
and it doesn't start a clock either.
They can use them. Possible, yeah.
If it doesn't go well, they're not like committed to saying, okay, we need to call you up within 30 days or 3 weeks or 21 days, whatever it is. I forget the exact time. I should know that, but from the time you start your rehab assignment. Now, granted, they could option them after the rehab assignment. It's really kind of equivalent, but point is.
It seems like there are legit things they want him to work on. This isn't just about building back up. They're starting Anthony Kay tonight, and I don't think they have that much faith that Anthony Kay is going to do great tonight. So they would have been happy to start Pearson, I think, if they thought Pearson was ready. But I think there are some mechanical things they want him to work on. That's why I could see maybe Logan Gilbert coming first, but I think it'll probably be close.
Got one more question to finish up the show. Jeff asked this earlier, Jeff Whitley or Whiteley. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but there you can see it in front of you. Trade offer: my glass now and Gavin Lux for his Mookie Betts. What do you think?
I'll take Betts. Same. For sure. Yeah. Not even close. I would just like Glasnow has been awesome and he could be awesome all year, but there's so many things that could go wrong with Glasnow just injury wise and innings limits or anything. Like, it's Mookie Betts. Like, I would want, if I was giving up Betts, I would take Glasnow. I would want a more reliable higher end second piece than Gavin Lux.
I'd agree with that. Although Lux seems to be hitting a little bit, had a couple hits today in the first game of the doubleheader against the Cubs.
Yeah.
Want to throw this out here to you guys. Thank you so much for listening, and appreciate you guys that are interacting with us on the stream. It's really cool to see that. Do us a favor, though. Hit that like button if you're watching on YouTube or you're watching on and however you're streaming on Periscope or on Facebook. And if you're listening to the podcast later, please subscribe. Like that as well. We do appreciate that. And give us feedback. We do appreciate those reviews. Let us know what you want to hear more of, what you want to hear less of. unless it's me talking about the Reds. I don't want to hear that. But no, you want to hear more Jays talk? We got you covered. We live to serve Canada, so we'll do that. Hey, minor league season starts tonight. We got the Prospect Podcast with Clay and James tomorrow. I'm sure they're super pumped about that, so please tune in tomorrow. And I'll be back again on Thursday with Brockness Monster. He's going to join me here, talk a little about what he's doing at Fade the Noise. We're going to talk a lot of DFS with him. And who knows, a lot of probably California baseball too. So tune in for that. And again, thank you guys for listening today. Take care.